Hello, welcome to this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media is with me. Hey, Colin, we just saw each other earlier this week.
We sure did. I've had a pretty hectic week. I've been at three conferences. I was at your conference. I'm at the dying embers of the TV of Tomorrow show in San Francisco, which was also lots of fun, and one other. But I'm heading home in just a bit. So anyway, we're actually going to talk a little bit about some of the things that we heard at your conference, which was really good. But we should probably also just acknowledge the big deal this week, shouldn't we?
Well, certainly the biggest of, well, two big deals really when you think about it, but AT&T, Time Warner winning approval, their Justice Department suit being denied, which you and I both predicted was going to happen. The Justice Department logic was rooted in like a 25 years ago paradigm. So no surprise that they won, and no sooner did they, AT&T, Time Warner get approved that Comcast put its official bid in for the 21st Century Fox assets for $65 billion. And they're obviously feeling very confident that they're going to get that deal approved as well. Now we have to wait and see how Disney responds and what type of a bidding war ensues. So we'll keep an eye on that. But as you said, we did want to come back to a couple of topics that were covered at our Video News online video ad summit earlier this week. You were moderating a session focused on the advantages of connected TV advertising, and you had a really great panel that we put together, and you want to share some of those high-level takeaways, so go for it.
Yeah, I sure do. As you say, it was a really good panel, Will. We had Seth Waters, who's VP of Demand Partnerships at Roku, and several others who I'll get to in just a second. Great conversation. I kicked off with a fairly open question, which was really just asking them about the advantages of connected TV as an advertising platform, sort of over traditional TV, but it wasn't just restricted to that. And I thought some had some really insightful comments. And I'll start with Seth's, Seth Waters. They sort of have a front seat to the evolution of the advertising supported model, which is really starting to come on much, much stronger, particularly since the connected TV joined the fray. And what he said was the real opportunity that connected TV offers today is in-flight optimization for brands to maximize the outcome of their campaign. And what he meant by that was that it's now possible for brands to actually modify the campaign as it's in process to optimize for whatever outcome it is that they want. So, you know, if they're looking for website traffic or store visits, or they simply want to increase sales, Seth's saying that they can basically change the way they're implementing the campaign along the way to actually improve the performance there. So that's a great advantage for brands. That gives them a great opportunity to really optimize what they're doing, optimize the performance of the campaigns. Another really interesting comment was from Jim Keller, who's VP of Sales at Hulu. And he made a very interesting point. He said that the fact that connected TV puts the audience in control was pretty significant because it leads to higher engagement, which I totally agree. I think when you're in control of the experience, you are more engaged. After all, you're picking exactly what it is you want to watch on Hulu. So I really enjoyed his comment there. And he went on to say that the higher engagement provides a significant advantage to marketers because it allows them to target and measure and have attribution tools in their messages in connected TV. And that leads to what everybody really wants, which is improved return on investment. So there's a very, very clear benefit, I think, from from connected television. So, I really enjoyed this session, and I had great comments also from Rich Kalaki from Pluto TV, and Frank Sinton from Beachfront Media. So, anything catch your ear from that panel, Will?
The overall takeaway from the session, which I think you and I may have talked about in the past, but really is sort of the well-known theme in terms of the advantage of connected TV advertising, is that it offers the attributes and the advantages that digital has enjoyed for many, many years already, with the advantages of the TV consumption experience. So it's the big experience, the high engagement, the ability to have messages seen beautifully on a big screen TV, et cetera. But marrying that with what you said that Seth said and Rich and Jim and Frank, which is that, you get all these digital benefits, the ability to optimize the campaign, the higher engagement, the interactivity, all those good things. So this is one of the reasons why I think a lot of people are so excited about connected TV advertising. And why it's growing as strongly as it is, because that's another, I think, key point that Seth made and Roku has talked publicly about, is that, the shift in consumption on the Roku platform from what has in the past been the vast majority ad-free SVOD to now having ad-supported content be the fastest growing type of content, and Roku kind of putting its money where its mouth is by starting up the ad-supported Roku channel, which gives them their own inventory that they can now sell. And Seth talked about how there's a huge number of searches on Roku for free TV, as he put it. And so this is a big opportunity, and I think advertisers are embracing it. And clearly, as we heard from the panelists, the industry is embracing it as well.
Yeah, they sure are. And actually, you're just reminding me of something that Rich Kalaki said, who's from a chief revenue officer of Pluto TV. And he made it what sounds like an obvious point, but I'm so glad he made it, because I think it's really important to remember. Connected TV is the primary platform for Pluto TV. And he made the point that what services like Pluto and like Hulu are doing is that they're providing ad-supported services as a counterbalance to Netflix and non-ad-supported. And this is exactly, I remember a couple of years ago we were at your show, Will, and they were bewailing the fact that there just wasn't enough inventory, and because so much viewing was locked up in ad-free services like Netflix. And now 2 years later, what we're seeing is platforms like Hulu, like Pluto and Roku's Roku channel, they're really advancing now, bringing premium content into the ad TV fold and just giving brands and advertisers much more opportunity to reach customers online. So it's an obvious point, but I think it's a very important point that we should bear in mind.
Absolutely. And that's something that advertisers welcome. And if it's done well, it's something that I think consumers are very comfortable with. The idea of getting a relevant ad, an engagement opportunity, something that you can potentially follow up on, is meaningful. And the other thing is, and I think maybe this provides a good transition to our next topic, which is oftentimes a lighter ad load than what you see in traditional linear TV. And that, I think, brings us to some of the remarks by our keynoter, who is David Luenda. This is now a separate session that was the interviewer was Mike Shields from Business Insider. And David Luenda is, of course, the EVP of Digital Sales and Strategy at CBS. And he talked about the impact of lighter ad loads, didn't he?
Yes, he certainly did, Will. And so he was asked pretty directly about the impact of reduced ad loads. And one of the things he said almost immediately was he said it won't cause advertisers to pay more. And funnily enough, I was just looking at some free will data that confirmed what he was saying. And what free will found was with a 30% cut in ad loads, that what they saw was a 7% increase in engagement. And so right there. There's a full stop right there. That sum kind of doesn't sound right unless you get a massive increase in the ad values. And you're really not. I found some data which said that that there have been a couple of providers that have reduced the ad load and actually ended up losing money. So they ended up losing about 2% on the deal. So I think that there's a lot of evidence that the reduced ad loads really don't help. And he made I thought this kind of made me laugh. He made a sort of swipe at cable channels. He said that that the cable channels, and these are the ones that have principally been trying the reduced ad loads, the cable channels have let their ad loads creep up quite a lot. And actually, it's true. There are about 10 to 15% more ads in an hour of television on cable than there are on broadcast. And he says that basically them cutting the ad loads brings their ad loads back down to where they should have been, which is where broadcasts are, which he says consumers are more comfortable with. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
And also noteworthy, he said that the ad load in CBS All Access, which is their OTT service, of course, that ad load is 30% lighter than what you might see in a typical broadcast. So they're already taking steps to reduce the ad load. And he also mentioned, by the way, that he said 30% of the CBS All Access subscribers take the no ad option. So that means that 70% of the CBS All Access subscribers are taking it with advertising. I believe the difference is like $4 or $5 per month between ads and no ads.
Yeah, it's $4.
Yeah, so they're opting to basically save the $4 and watch that 30% lighter ad load.
Yeah. And I know I was subscribing to CBS All Access, and I certainly did take the no ads tier because I was watching the new Star Trek. It was a pretty good experience. I got to tell you, very competitive with SVOD viewing from Netflix. Very, very good experience. So the quality was super. So yeah, but again, that's encouraging, right? 70% of folks are choosing to watch with ads. I know there's been some equivocation from Hulu on exactly how many people are buying their ad-free viewing, which is also $4 a month. We've heard estimates as high as 50% and as low as, a sort of vague, the majority type statements are watching with ads. But it's good to hear, you know, a concrete number about 30%. And if I was an advertiser, that would warm my heart a little bit, Will, that so many people are opting to continue to watch with ads. And, you know, once again, this is a reachable audience for brands and advertisers, so they should be pretty happy.
I agree. I mean, I think that the growth of ad-free viewing in Netflix and Amazon should be of great concern to advertisers, because that's pulling more and more people out of the ad-supported ecosystem, which makes it harder for advertisers to reach those viewers. And it puts more pressure on them to figure out other avenues to do that. So these services, whether it's, you know, CBS All Access or Hulu, where the majority of people are still taking an ad-supported service and are watching primarily on a connected TV, so it's still a living room experience, but delivering a better advertising experience, I think all of that should be music to the ears of advertisers, as you just said.
And I'm sure it is. And if they weren't at your show, they should have been at your show, Will, to hear this live. It was a great discussion. There was one other thing I did want to mention that I thought was really interesting. David Luenda, he also talked about CBS All Access. He mentioned the fact that CBS is in the process of launching a fourth OTT service, which is going to be Entertainment Tonight Live. They already have in market CBSN, which is a 24/7 news network, ad-supported, free, and CBS Sports HQ, which is also ad-supported, available for free to consumers. They've already added CBSN to CBS All Access. I have no doubt that they will also add CBS Sports HQ and Entertainment Tonight when it comes out. I suspect that they will also be available outside of CBS All Access as well. It certainly makes sense from an advertising model to get as broad coverage as you possibly can. But it's interesting to see what they will do with CBS All Access when they bring all of this stuff in inside of that single experience. And they're beginning, you know, it's beginning to look a bit like a mini vMVPD going forward, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think very much a CBS branded virtual MVPD, though, right? I mean, they're not, best we can tell, they're not looking to incorporate or aggregate non-CBS content into their offering. But yeah, they, you know, their thing, obviously, many going back now many years, they opted not to participate in the Hulu consortium, and that's given them a lot more freedom to do their own thing. And they have been aggressive about pursuing their own thing, and it seems to have been working out pretty well for them. That said, because they're not participating in Hulu, there's probably an event down the road that they may cause them to have some regret, which is that when the dust settles eventually on this Comcast Disney Fox situation, either Comcast or Disney will end up owning 60% of Hulu and therefore be in control of Hulu. And given how well Hulu is doing, and also given how well Netflix's stock continues to do, I think that it's practically inevitable that at some point down the road, not anytime soon, mind you, but at some point down the road, it's hard to imagine that there's not going to be some type of a initial public offering for Hulu. And that's going to put a monstrous number on the Hulu valuation and bring a really nice windfall to the owners of Hulu. So CBS is going to miss out on that. But in the meantime, they've certainly had their own flexibility to be able to pursue their own digital initiatives. And, you know, credit where credit's due. They've exploited that opportunity very nicely.
They certainly have. And I suppose that we should also point out there's another big difference between CBS All Access and Hulu. Hulu has 10 times as many subscribers. But of course, from a financial standpoint, CBS would only be, if they were participating, would only be getting a part of that revenue, whereas they're getting all of CBS All Access's revenue. But, you know, I want to make sure we talk about one more session, and that was a session that you did a fireside chat with Group 9. Tell us a bit about that session, because it was a fascinating session.
Yeah, so Group 9 Media is not necessarily a household name. They've actually raised about $140 million. Discovery is a big investor of theirs. And they own some passion brands that actually in total aggregate to about 6 billion video views per month. So they own brands like Thrillist and Now This and The Dodo, which is an animal-oriented property. So, you know, real strong passion brands, again, about 6 billion views per month. But interestingly, of the 6 billion, only about 50 million come on their owned and operated properties. So, in other words, the vast, vast, vast majority of those video views come through distributed opportunities, primarily Facebook and YouTube, and certainly Hayden Lynch, who's their SVP of Ad Solutions and Innovation, who I interviewed, said that they've got some views on Twitter and, you know, other places as well. But here was the big sort of stunning data point share that Hayden made, which really still absolutely blows me away, which is that of those 6 billion views, they're only able to monetize about 10 to 20% of them right now, which means that, you know, somewhere 80, 90% of those views, they're not getting a return on, a financial return on. Now, of course, they're getting a return in the sense of building their brand and extending their reach and other, you know, sort of more intangible opportunities. But when it comes to strict monetization, they're actually only able to get a return on a relatively small sliver. And what all that said to me, Colin, is that, you know, number one, the platforms, Facebook, et cetera, have a massive opportunity ahead of them if they can really start driving monetization in all these videos of the various publishers who are distributing their videos to Facebook and others. So massive opportunity on the one hand. On the other hand, that the publishers, the Group Nines of the world, should be banding together and pushing on these platforms as hard as they can to really invest in monetization avenues for them, because to not be able to monetize such a large percentage of your work. And that's really what it is. I mean, the Group 9 properties are working hard. They're investing money to create this great video, but not to be able to monetize that is really uneconomic. So they have a huge incentive to really band together and try to get this monetization engine on the platforms really working. And boy, that was news to me. I just didn't have an appreciation for the numbers looking like that.
Yeah, me neither. Very, very fascinating. And but you know, this is, as you say, this is one of the biggest challenges for platforms like Facebook, right? They've never really been able to articulate a clear monetization strategy for premium providers on their platforms. And you know, funnily enough, Will, something came up in one of the panels here at TVOT, and actually, Rob Gable, who is CEO of Tubular Labs, that's counting, you know, it's one of these companies that is providing documentation on exactly how well everybody is doing in this business. He said something that kind of blew me away about Facebook. I don't know if you remember last year, Facebook changed the rules on how they were promoting videos in people's feeds, and they flipped it from being premium to being more focused around what is being recommended. And he said that this had a dramatic effect on some companies. Some companies actually ended up going broke over this. They completely lost all of their monetization, and they ended up, you know, just going broke. Others companies took a few months before they were actually able to recover from this and start making money again. So I think that's one of the things about Group 9 that I think was really highlighted, is the vulnerability of these particular services to the vagaries of what the platforms decide they want to do.
Absolutely, Colin. That's always, of course, been an issue with Google, is that they tweak that algorithm and your search traffic goes down, and that can really impact your business. So there's no question over-dependence on platforms is a huge problem. And with Facebook, of course, the other issue is that most content consumed in Facebook is done through the feed. And the feed is just not a great environment for video advertising. And so even though all these publishers want their video to be in there so that you'll pause for a moment and watch it, being able to monetize it when you do so is just incredibly difficult. And of course, that's one of the main motivators for Facebook to launch the Watch tab and try to become more of a destination-oriented experience for users. But long way to go, man. It's remarkable. It really is.
It is. But the thing that I think your show really highlighted, Will, is the pendulum is definitely swinging back towards advertising in online delivery, and that's exciting in itself. So I'm really pleased I was able to be there, and it was a great event.
Great. Well, thanks for that, Colin. And just a reminder to our listeners that I'll be posting videos, the full session videos, over the next couple of weeks as I get them back from my editor. And as I get to watch them, I'll have some more commentary around some of the key highlights of those sessions as well. So, Colin, I think we are at the end of our time here. So go relax from your week of conference participation. I'm going to relax from my big weeks and months of leading up to our big ad summit this week, and we will regroup again for next week, right?
We will indeed. And once again, I want to say thanks to all the people that have come up to me, both at Will's conference and at the TV of Tomorrow conference, and they just come up and they want to say hi because they listen to the podcast. I really appreciate it, and I love the conversations that I get with our listeners. I'm sure it's the same for you.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. Thanks for that reminder, Colin. That's great. Thanks again to all of our listeners, and we will see you all again next week.